It's my pleasure to introduce Betsy Reif-Schneider. I love her title. Environmental Justice Coordinator for the Catholic Diocese of Stockton. I found out about her because remember that wonderful video we saw, Keeping the Earth?
Yes.
When we saw that video about a year ago, I said, gee, that's great. Who's organizing it? And do we have any representatives of that movement here in California? So I contacted the publisher in Boston, and they said, well, why don't you contact these people? And one of them was Ms. Reif-Schneider. And she's in Stockton, and we asked her if she would come down and share her insights as to how we, as the Catholic and beyond Christian communities, how do we do ecological reverence as a group? Well, her diocese extends from the rich farmlands of the Central Valley through the canyons of Yosemite National Park and into the stark beauty of Mono Lake in the Eastern Sierra. Despite containing some of the nation's most productive farmlands and landscapes, stunning landscapes, the diocese shares some of its most intractable environmental problems and some of the highest poverty rates. So Betsy has spent more than 30 years working in the environmental advocacy field, including the Sierra Club, the Mono Lake Committee, Friends of the River, California Statewide River Conservation Organization. She has also worked as a legislative deputy for the Los Angeles City Council and a water conservation manager for the Federal Bureau of Reclamation. She currently serves on the board of directors of the Sierra Nevada Alliance, and she is a jail visitation volunteer for Loaves and Fishes, a Sacramento-based organization serving the homeless and destitute, and is an active member of St. Francis of Assisi Parish in Sacramento, where Father Franklin Fong, by the way, was ordained. I wanted to read also to you just a couple of brief passages from an article in last Sunday's Los Angeles Times that speaks directly to this emerging church phenomenon that we'll be considering today. And the headline is, Religious Groups Lobby on Climate. It may make for strange bedfellows, but religious groups are marshaling a nationwide campaign to support legislation to combat global warming. And it goes on to talk about this coalition. And then it says, among other things, Pope Benedict XVI has joined the environmental bandwagon, earning the nickname the Green Pope for proclamations such as, quote, the environment is God's gift to everyone, unquote. Well, I won't say more. I'd like to hear what Betsy has to say. And we don't have that handy.
You may certainly. This was just the handout is really for you for later because I'm not going to specifically refer to it, but I thought it might be a nice resource for you if you'd like.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Pat, because of your prayer by Blessed Jane, I don't know if I can get through this without crying. So, to begin with, please forgive me if I start crying because. I am so grateful to be here, and thanks to Tom, I've been able to listen to a number of the sessions online, and I'm going to continue to do so now that I know where you are, and my regret is that I live in Sacramento, and I can't come down every week to be with you, but I have been so inspired, and I think the next time I come to Sacramento, to come to Santa Barbara, I think I'll go to Reverend Dunn's Mass. Mm-hmm. I'm so impressed. I didn't listen to both of the series that you had from Richard Rohr. Was it a video that you saw?
Yeah, you were hearing the soundtrack of a video.
The soundtrack of the video. Mm-hmm. But it reminded me that some years ago, I heard on a cassette tape, so that tells you how long ago it is, a presentation by him, and he talked about, and here we go with being in Africa with Blessed Jane Goodall again. He was somewhere in Africa, and he had been at, he had said Mass, and during the prayers of the faithful, one of the people said, may we never live in stone houses. And everyone said, amen to that. And afterwards, he said to, he asked the elder, he said, what was that about, not living in stone houses? And the elder said, well, if we each start to build a stone house, then we will put doors on each one of our stone houses, and then whatever on the inside of that house belongs to me rather than to the entire community. Mm-hmm. And I think when we talk about the environmental justice, eco-spirituality, it really comes down to me versus we. And I don't know if any of you had an opportunity to see Bill McKibben's sermon called The Comforting Whirlwind. And you can see it online, read it online. But one of the things he talked about was when he was writing his book, The Age of Missing Information, he asked people throughout the Fairfax, Virginia area if they would record every single channel of TV for a 24-hour period. So they had 100 channels. So he sat down with all of those tapes, and he spent almost a year just watching television. And he said the message that TV is distilled down to, that comes out to all of us in our culture, is we are the most important things on the earth, that everything revolves around me. And at the end of this sermon, he said that religious communities like us, religious communities are almost the only institutions left in our society that posit some goal other than accumulation for our existence here on this planet. And think about it, it could be true. So I feel that we have a responsibility to be swimming against the tide, and I know you all have heard over and over again that we must be prophets. If not us, then whom? If not now, then when? Time is now. Father Franklin, I listened to Father Franklin last week, so in a way I was here with you, and I know that his talk was on environmental spirituality at a personal level, and I heard him talking about his wow moment, his aha moment, and I often think that engaging larger communities starts out with us, each one of us having our wow moment that fills us up and keeps us going. And it also involves listening to other people's wow moment. And, you know, Pat gave me a wonderful wow moment. I mean, just reading Jane Goodall's book, which I have read, it's wonderful. And I wanted to ask you all to think about your wow moment. It could be around environmental justice or whatnot. It may be something else that really feeds your passion. So I'd like you to think about it for just a minute. And I thought I'd ask one or two people to share their oh wow moment, but if you're still thinking, I'll give you my wow moment first. I've had a few, but the thing that keeps me going on working for environmental justice, because so often I keep thinking we are losing, nobody cares, nobody listens, but years ago when I worked for the Mono Lake Committee, I worked in Los Angeles, so my job was to convince LA City to start conserving water, because if we conserve 15% of our water, that was enough to save Mono Lake. So I would go around with the Mono Lake slideshow, back then slideshows, yay, and show the slideshow, and the wonderful pictures of what Mono Lake in the Eastern Sierra is. How many people, has anybody been to Mono Lake? See, I'm going to start crying. Well, I was at a school in South Central LA. It was a really, really poor school. It was literally in the shadow of the 10 freeway. There were no trees, there was no grass, it was all asphalt, and all the children were going to school in those modular trailer things. And the class that I spoke to were the 5 and 6 year old, not grade, but the kindergarten and the first graders, 5 and 6 years old. So I'm showing the slideshow, all the wonderful pictures, and the picture of the little snowy plover came up guarding its nest. And I said to the children, children, you know, if Mono Lake goes dry, if it's allowed to die, there are a number of bird species that could die as well, like the snowy plover. It could become extinct. And the teacher stopped me. And she said, children, this is a new word for us. Does anyone know what the word extinct means? And they're thinking and thinking. Two little hands tentatively go up, and the teacher calls on this one little boy, and I wish I knew his name. I never learned his name, but I think of him so much. He got up, and he said, you know, I think extinct is when a type of animal dies and something in us dies too. So with that child in my heart, I have to keep doing this. I just have to. So that's my wow story, and I'm wondering if any of you would like to share a wow moment. Yes, Keith.
My wow moment for environmentalism was they read me a letter from my wife's great-grandfather who cut fan oil in Humboldt County for tannic acid. They were tanners. And a passage in there gave the best way to get rid of those pesky redwoods and Douglas fir. They drill a hole in them and blow them up. And you know, to them, the forest was endless. And then I really hit me about, oh, no, 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 we can't keep on doing this.
Yes, Jim.
When I was a teenager, I was in Boy Scouts, and we did a lot of packing and hiking the High Sierra Trail and the John Muir Trail, and most of the time we didn't put our tents up because it was summertime, and when we'd see a thunderhead coming up over the mountain, we put our tents up. But I remember laying there in my sleeping bag at night, looking up at the sky, and for the first time in my life, I saw the Milky Way. Because down in the city lights and everything, it was clear. The Milky Way, and it was a tremendously impressive sight for me. I just went, wow, that's what the Milky Way is, because I've heard of it, but I've really seen it in that kind of detail.
Anybody else like to share about Jude, and then you in the back?
My wife and I were in the upper... We were in the upper reaches of Yosemite, where they have the lodge up there. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, no lights, it was wintertime, it was cold, and all these pine trees were there, and the stars from the horizon always filled the sky and filled the trees all looked like Christmas trees. I mean, I couldn't see that for that.
Many years ago, I was reading a book about the Native American culture. And I read about how when they took a buffalo, they would take and use all the parts of the animal, and they would thank the animal's spirit for allowing it to be taken to help them sustain themselves. And I thought that was just an incredible idea. I was very young. That was my wife.
How about 2 more, you and then Diane. Sorry.
Right after the Jesus Siege of Fire that we had, the last one, I took a walk one morning, about a month afterwards, up to the top of our street, which hits the San Marcos Pass. And the fire had crossed the pass at that point, and there's a home being built on quite a bit of property. And it burned all the property. There were kiwis and palm trees and eucalyptus trees and lots of planting. And the man, I don't know who owns that house, but the man had workers there 7 days a week for weeks cleaning up the debris, the brush. That he actually had them trimming. There must be 30 to 50 palm trees lining this long driveway that goes back. Had them trim all the burn off of it, all the way up, so they were just kind of naked. And one day, after this was pretty much completed, I stood there and looked, and I actually started to cry because it was so beautiful that each and every planting on that property was attended to. And there was order restored in that property. And I thought to myself, why am I crying? Why? It's because my own sense of order that I love, but more it's my deep sense that nothing is left behind, lost, or forgotten, that everything is noticed and cared for. Something like that. And you should see the palm trees and the shrubs and each one of those plantings that was attended to, how they have flourished after the fire. So there's something about that extinction and that paying attention to the smallest part of the order that God provides in nature. Mm-hmm. That is happening.
Thank you. Diane?
I went to a missionary high school in southern India, and it was 7,000 feet up in the mountains at Hill Station. And around noontime every day, the clouds would roll in. It wasn't fog, it was, they were clouds. And they were pink and yellow, you know, lots of color in the clouds, and truly felt connected to God. And I just loved it when the clouds rolled in.
Those are a lot of wow moments. Thank you. I think it's that those wow moments where we find our passion, and then when we start listening to other people's passion, when our wow moment collides or connects in a good way with other people's wow moments, that our movements can be born and start moving forward. I was listening last week, and during the question and answer period, someone, when Franklin was talking about taking action, someone here said taking action by listening. And I'm wondering, is that person here today? Oh, it was you, Jude? Could you tell me a little bit more about what you meant by that? Because you're, you know, at heart a community organizer, I can tell.
I guess it was because at one time I wasn't listening when I was working. And then to learn something, I think you have to listen. And the trouble is most people love the sound of their own voice. And I felt in my own circumstance that I wasn't learning anything because I wasn't listening. And I think this is the first step. Even before you read, you listen. And it's active listening.
Active listening. And I took a little training course that Catholic Charities sent me to on community organizing, and I'm no community organizer, but I did get some tools, and the first one was active listening, intentional conversations and listening. And there's a group called Mothers of East LA. I don't know if anyone's heard of them. They're a wonderful group, and I won't go into the big long story now, but maybe during the break or afterwards. But they gave a presentation at a big international water conservation conference that I attended, and they asked the audience that looked a lot like our audience today, and they said, when we went into our community and we asked people there, what is the biggest issue in our community here in East LA? And this person who was speaking to the group said, what do you think the number one issue was? And people said, oh, crime, gangs, bad schools. And she said, no, it was trash. It was litter in the vacant lots. That was the number one issue. And then she put up on the screen a big ear. And she said, the only way I knew that was because I listened. I listened. So I mention all that to say I think as Jude rightly pointed out, the whole key to be able to go from that personal commitment, that wow, that passion inside of us, to our parish and church-based commitment is to figure out, to just start talking to people and asking them what's important to them or what's their wow moment. And then you won't get everybody, but you might start getting a few people, as Franklin said, who will accompany each other on the journey. And so I thought I would give some examples of what seems to be working where I am, and then also throw it out, because I already know that there are some wonderful examples here in this audience that I'm taking back with me to the Stockton Diocese. I've already picked up literature. I thought I'd tell you how this environmental justice project in the Stockton Diocese got started. And I still think I may be truly an endangered species. I think I'm the only environmental justice coordinator in a Catholic diocese, and I hope that it grows. But back in 2004, Bishop Stephen Blair, who is one of the good princes of the church, pray for Stephen Blair that we have more like him, because he got a $20,000 seed grant from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops to do something about this environmental stuff. And his idea was to look into a pastoral letter. Now, the Central Valley goes from Redding in the north all the way to Bakersfield, and it is the largest valley in the world. It's bigger than the Rift Valley. It's bigger than any valley. It's the biggest valley in the world. And so Bishop Blair thought, here I am in Stockton. We have the Sacramento bishop who goes all the way to the Oregon border. Then we have the Fresno bishop who goes all the way to Bakersfield. Maybe the three of us could get together and we could really look into the Central Valley as a sacred place. Sounds good. So he calls up the bishop in Fresno. No, I'm not interested. Calls up the Sacramento bishop. No, I'm not interested. So Bishop Blair knew that returning grant money is a mortal sin. So he kept it. And there are a few, but that's one of them. So he decided, well, the Stockton Diocese, it's six counties, and we go from the Central Valley up into Tuolumne, Calaveras, and all the way over into Mullet. Why don't we just do something here? Well, rather than issuing some proclamation, what he did was he gathered together some people from throughout the diocese, but not just the environmentalists, the usual suspects. He brought in pesticide salesmen, he brought in timber people, he brought in environmentalists, he brought in teachers, business people, water experts, people who were active leaders in the Stockton Diocese. So, and we have a little planning committee. So he brought us together, and I became the consultant, and we came up with this series of three meetings. The first one brought about 80 people together for dinner, Eucharist, breaking bread together, and he invited Father Ken Hines, and that's the talk here, Ecology and the Christian Tradition. Ken Hines, another Franciscan, is the director of theology at Boston College. So he told this very diverse group about Catholic social teaching on the environment. And it was a revelation to most people, because who knew that one of the basic teachings, social teachings of the Catholic Church is we have a responsibility to care for creation. And he said what you have here on this piece of paper. And he also told this wonderful story about St. Francis seeing the city of Assisi upside down. But if you're interested, I can tell you about that later. So that was our first session. The second session, we all came together again, and we had picked out different issues that we knew were big issues in our diocese. Air quality, water issues, land use issues, pesticides, and then also who were the community organizers. So the experts came and they talked to us and explained what was going on. And then at the third session, it was a plan of action. Okay, now, given all of this, what do we want to work on? We can't work on it all. Let's pick one thing. Now, that's probably the second tenet. List them and then don't do too much. Do a few things well, or in this case, one thing. And we decided to choose air quality because we can't scapegoat anybody. We are all victims of air quality, and we are all causing it. So we had to work together. And a smaller group of about 20 from the different parishes came together, and we started working on this. And we work at both, I'll say, a micro and a macro level. The micro level, which has been a lot harder, and we struggle with it, is trying to get the environmental justice, responsibility, care for creation into the blood systems of our parishes, and that's hard. I think here at this parish, it is in the blood. It seems like it is in the bloodstream, or at least in the men's urinal, that we're going to have a...
We're going to have a tour. What's called a flushless urinal. You ladies have never seen this, but you must.
Three of us had a preview tour, and believe me, it's worth it. So we've been trying to do those one-to-one conversations in the parishes, talking to the pastor, talking to the staff in the parish office, and then who else should we talk to? Is there anybody who would be interested about this? And oftentimes it's the parishes with a social justice committee, bingo, that are the most interested. Just faith, parishes that have been through Just Faith, bingo. You have people who are interested. So we're trying to do things at the local level. But our macro level is the one that I get really excited about because we go to Sacramento and lobby on bills. The first bill that this group decided to work on, we started asking people, what should we work on? And someone said, oh, well, there's this bill that's starting to come up in the legislature called AB 32. The Greenhouse Gas Reduction Act. And we said, ooh, that seems kind of big. Okay. So we started working on it. We wrote letters for Catholic Lobby Day, that's always in April. Our diocese had a busload of 100 people, and among all the other issues, we went in and said AB 32. And our bishop, he wrote letters on it, and we put it out on the network and all of that. And it passed, and it is now gone. And it is the foundation of the federal legislation that people like Barbara Boxer are trying to get passed at the federal level. We also started working with the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District, which it is a feudal system. And I won't go into it, gets sort of boring and technical, but we wanted to move the debate at the Air District. So we worked with the local environmental justice committees, and when we would go in and talk to some of the Air District people, you can imagine a group of, we're here on behalf of the Catholic Church, and on other bills that we pick one or two bills, again, don't try to do too much, so we pick one or two bills every year, and we go to Sacramento, or when they're in their district, when the legislators are in the district, even better. So they're there, with it. We are here for this particular environmental bill, such as the Human Right to Water Act. What? And at committee meetings, we have turned a couple of the legislators who probably would never vote for this, and we turned them, they would vote yes, and we were able to get it out of committee and onto the floor, and on rare occasions Governor Schwarzenegger has actually signed the bills. So that's what we're doing at the macro level, and we have so much more to do. The other exciting thing for you all here is I know, part of the LA Archdiocese, and there is a wonderful woman named Alice Druffel. Does anybody know Alice? Well, she is the volunteer chair of the Peace and Justice Committee at the LA Archdiocese, and she is Episcopal. And she's wonderful, and she really wants to move environmental issues and get Cardinal Mahoney to work on a couple of these things. And she is also the Southern California Outreach Director for California Interfaith Power and Light, which is...
We've heard of this. Tell us about this.
I would be happy to. It's also, if you want to go to interfaithpower.org, it's one of my, Betsy's favorite, the list of favorite websites. Interfaith Power and Light does a lot of things. One of the things they do, well, actually, is it Maureen in the back? Maureen, could you mention a little bit, well, no, we'll do that later. Interfaith Power and Light works with local parishes, well, parishes, temples, synagogues, to help the places of worship become more energy efficient and also to start lobbying on things like climate change legislation. Every year in June, they have a clergy day when clergy from throughout California come to Sacramento and lobby on clean energy and clean air bills. And they're there with their collars. The Buddhist nun is in the most glorious vestment. And so they do that. And they're very parish-based. Alice, I know, would be happy to come here, tell you about cool congregations, and how, and I'll be asking Maureen later to talk about what she's doing, because it's very similar to what Interfaith Power and Light allows. So,
I just wanted to mention that the director of California Interfaith Power and Light came, and we had a meeting with our local congressperson and EcoFaith, a Trinity church, about 2 months ago.
Trinity is the Episcopal church.
Right.
They're part of the coalition.
My friend Alice actually gave me notes from your meeting. I was so excited. So Sally Bingham came.
Yeah.
Talk about a prophet who was crying in the wilderness for the longest time, and now everybody's on board. She's the one who coined the phrase, "What would Jesus drive?" Maureen.
No, thing. I was there with Hillary, our justice student from our parish, and it was a fabulous evening, and so many interfaith people together, and that group still exists, so we might want to connect this group with that group online somewhere in cyberspace.
I think it would be fabulous. Well, I know it's quarter till, and I'm going to give just a few more examples, and then I wanted to open up.
We also have that little video if you want.
Okay. A few other examples. I thought I'd just tell you what some parish-based things are doing. My parish, St. Francis of Assisi, we started environmental fasts for Lent. And the first one was, not surprisingly, an energy fast for Lent. And the reason we did it is because, one, we're living their way ahead. The one wow moment for the head of our adult faith formation committee was, I now have a grandchild. This is now personal. I need to do something. So every week we would have, did you know, a fact in the bulletin, and then here's what you can do, and here's a website that you can go to. And we did it. And we also gave away compact fluorescent light bulbs. Now, in the Stockton Diocese, we received 10,000 free compact fluorescent light bulbs from PG&E. Mm. And for Environmental Justice Sunday, you better believe, after Mass, we were handing those out. So it put the idea in people's head. The next year, we had a Lenten fast for Sister Water. And one of the things we started out with was, we got people to stop using water bottles, those use them once, throw them away. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the environmental consequences of that. So we have gone out, and of course now we find out that this sort of bottle isn't that great either, that you really should have one. But we were trying. So we have our Franciscan logo on here, and we sold 300 of them after Mass, and we put inside water conservation tips, and in one of them we had a free, in just one of them, it was a free trip for four people on a rafting trip with Friends of the River. And we told people that it was in one of those. And then every single week we did something. And for both the Energy Fast and for Sister Water, we had a special envelope saying every time you don't use a water bottle, the throwaway kind, take that money, put it in the envelope. And at the end of Lent, we are going to send it to Catholic Relief Services because they had a well drilling project in Ethiopia. Right. And we got hundreds of dollars. Mm-hmm. And so we sent it to them. So it was something specific and practical and visible that people could do. And I still see these all the time at church meetings and whatnot. Just really fast, some other things I know that are happening up in our Sierra foothills, very conservative. We can't even say environmental justice, but we do say care for God's creation. Everybody's okay with that. At the back of Mass, we have these big 5-gallon buckets with care for God's creation, battery recyclable program. And we gave out bags to everybody. They took them home and they bring their batteries back. And there are so many batteries that they don't count them. They just weigh them. And every few months they say, we have recycled so many pounds of batteries. And they love it. And now those parishes are getting more involved in, wait a minute, Tuolumne County, our blue bags for recycling, I saw them going into the trash dump. Mm-hmm. So we're having a meeting with the head of the Public Works Department. So suddenly, from these small steps, people take the next step. One other thing that I wanted to mention is, I'm not sure what parish it is, but in Oakland, the youth group put up Stations of the Cross for Earth. And each station talks about a different aspect of what we are doing to Mother Earth and a prayer. Is that wonderful?
Mm-hmm. I know.
It's taking an old tradition.
Yes. Exactly. Really quickly, we're talking to the choir here, aren't we? Yes. And we need to broaden our base. Because the choir actually, when I think about it, we happen to sing one note here, but the choir is made up of lots of different notes. And there are so many different ways into care for God's creation. For instance, there's an evangelical organization called Restoring Eden, and it's an evangelical youth group. And they actually have bumper stickers. I love them. I want one of these. It says, God's original plan was to hang out in a garden with two naked vegetarians. And on these evangelical college campuses, Restoring Eden every so often has an event called Keggers for Christ. Keggers, beer kegs. Keggers for Christ. And you know, when the Congress had a majority of Republican members, they were the majority party, it was the evangelical churches, the evangelical environmental network that helped save the Endangered Species Act. They were the ones that some members of Congress listened to. And they saved the Endangered Species Act for us. There are different ways of appealing to people. Obviously, we know the economic point of view. You know, hey, energy efficiency, water efficiency. And the great thing, and Tom already mentioned it in the LA Times article, we have in the Catholic Church a built-in environmental booster, the Green Pope. Who knew? And, you know, the Vatican is now the first and I think only nation state in the world that is carbon neutral. The Vatican is carbon neutral. Yes. And in July, Pope Benedict just issued his latest encyclical, Caritas in Veritate. It is full of social justice and environmental justice messages. For instance, he says, "The environment is God's gift to everyone, and in our use of it, we have a responsibility toward the poor, toward future generations, and toward humanity as a whole." He says, the natural environment is more than raw material to be manipulated at our pleasure. It is a wondrous work of the Creator containing a grammar which sets forth ends and criteria for its wise use, not its reckless exploitation. So as we're reaching out to other people who might say, "Oh, a bunch of tree huggers," and say, "Ah, but have you read Caritas in Veritate?" And in fact, when I met with Arnold Schwarzenegger's environmental staff person around this wonderful bill that ended up vetoing, but it was called the Human Right to Water Act, and all it says is all Californians have the right to clean and affordable water, and he vetoed it. But before he vetoed it, a group of us went in to talk to his aide, and the aide wasn't listening, and finally I said, "Well, you know, when you tell the governor about your meeting here today, you can say that Pope Benedict has endorsed the bill." And he looked at me, "What?" And I said, "Yes. In July, Pope said in Caritas in Veritate that everyone throughout the world has a right to clean and affordable water. It's right in the encyclical." So this isn't a liberal versus a conservative. It is everybody's. And I would also like to just mention that in our diocese, one of the things that Bishop Blair has done, which has turned things on its head in a way, is for October in our diocese and probably elsewhere is traditionally Respect Life Month. And it's usually one issue that's talked about. But what Bishop Blair did was, he said, the first weekend he had a pastoral, and in it he said, "To respect life, you must respect the envelope of life, the earth on which all life depends." The next week, the focus was on abortion. The next week, it was on end-of-life issues. The next week, the focus was on the death penalty. And the next week was Environmental Justice Sunday. And Bishop Blair has done his best to bring the both sides to an appreciation, or to at least start talking with one another, to listen to other people's wow stories, to see maybe where we can come together. And although I have much more to say, maybe we should end here. Oh, okay, one more thing before we break, and then I'm looking so forward to all the questions and discussion.
I just want that video, because after the break.
But maybe we could do that after the break.
Yeah, sure.
And it's only 4 minutes, but I'll leave you with this. I was mentioning about the legislative aspect, and it's a way that it's very focused and we can get involved. Every year we push one or two issues on environmental legislation. We also put it into the Catholic Legislative Network, which if you're interested, I can tell you more about. But when we went to the state capitol and lobbied, a former state senator came to us and we had a Raise Your Voice workshop. And he told us, and I will tell each and every one of you, he said, "What distinguishes you from all the lobbyists and all the other visitors to our legislative offices is that you are there for the public good, not for your own personal gain. You are there for the public good." And he said, "You remind legislators that we're not just a nation where only money matters. And you remind legislators why they ran for office in the first place." So we are prophets. If not us, then who? And if not now, then when?